With each passing day, the pace of change seems to accelerate exponentially as new technologies are introduced. It's no wonder corporations put so much emphasis on digital transformations to not only survive, but to adapt and thrive.
Driving change is about tapping into the hearts and the minds of people. And that is what CIOs really have been doing throughout their careers, is that change happens to be technology, but the leadership muscles that we've always been building over these years are related to being change agents and change champions.
That's Danny Brown, Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Whirlpool Corporation, the world's leading kitchen and laundry appliance company. Danny leads the Global Information Systems Division of Whirlpool, spearheading the household brand's technology portfolio. Before joining Whirlpool, Danny served as Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Brunswick Corporation, a maker of boats and maritime engines. She spent much of her career with DuPont, the biotech, chemicals, and pharmaceuticals giant. There, she held information technology roles of increasing responsibility, including Asia-Pacific applications delivery, where she lived in Singapore with her family for 3 years. She was also Chief Information Officer for Crop Protection, a $3.5 billion DuPont strategic business unit. Danny was also the IT transformation productivity leader, helping to significantly reduce costs through the deployment of new aggressive breakthrough technology. She holds a Bachelor of Arts in Computer Science from the Indiana University of Pennsylvania, a Master of Science in Information Systems from Pennsylvania State University, and an MBA from Drexel University. And in addition, Danny holds the internationally recognized Six Sigma Black Belt certification for professionals advanced in process improvement tools and techniques.
We've now put even more emphasis on the change management side of things, because it's step back from the technology and just understand what is changing in that person's world. So it's a different way of looking at that type of change that you want to drive.
I'm Meryl McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and to gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Danny Brown. Today, we have Danny Brown with us. Danny, thank you so much for joining us with Let Go and Lead.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me, Merle.
Oh, very excited. And you've had such an incredible career. You worked at DuPont, Brunswick Corporation, and now you're at Whirlpool. So tell us, what are you doing there?
Well, at Whirlpool, our vision, which is why we come to work every single day, is to be the best kitchen and laundry company in pursuit of improving life at home for our consumers. So my remit as the global CIO is to help unlock value for the company by leveraging information technology and data in support of our strategic imperatives, which include delivering product leadership, which is continuing to apply innovation across our product portfolio, redefining what a product is, which is the creation of new digital products and services, and then winning the digital consumer journey, which is engaging with the consumer through various channels, including digital channels. And lastly, reinventing our value chain. And this is leveraging technologies such as manufacturing 4.0 and others to support world-class manufacturing. So as a key critical enabler to unlocking the value from each of these initiatives is technology and data. So I'm just excited that our IT organization has an opportunity to play a key role in supporting the future of our company.
Wow, that sounds like a big job. It also sounds like the company's going through somewhat of a transformation.
We are in the middle of a transformation because for me, I define change or transformation as the volume and the speed at which you are driving change. And so when you think about our strategic imperatives and really what they'll bring to our company, we will be introducing new technologies and digital capabilities at a faster rate than ever before. We will have to aggregate and mine, find more data, far more data than ever before. We'll have a larger threat landscape, unfortunately, than ever before, meaning more connected vendors, more automation in our environment, et cetera. And then lastly, we will have new and different capabilities that we're going to need to extract value from these modern platforms. So Similarly, you know, as we think about our products and innovation, which is not foreign to us, it's what our company is built upon. We've always thought big and thought boldly in an innovative way. And now we're just applying it from a digital perspective as well.
Well, I imagine it's got to be difficult for a company like Whirlpool that's always been a pioneer to keep pioneering in the space. And you mentioned redefining products. What kind of things are you thinking about there?
Sure. So at our core are our products, the laundry and the kitchen appliances. But when you think about redefining the product, it's about really how do we create new digital products and services that are embedded into our core products, such as connecting to our appliances. So today, even in my home, I have one of our washing machines and dryers, and I can connect wirelessly to that washing machine and dryer and interact with different, we call them high value engagements, you know, so that I can know when the washer is stopped or when it's changing different cycles.
So that's really interesting. That's about how you interact with the machine. And then are you doing anything around the Internet of Things in terms of how the machines interact with one another?
Well, absolutely. So when you think about Internet of Things, it's really around the sensors and the data, and then the way the interfaces in which consumers engage with that information and data. So when you think about that engagement and the knowledge really that can be gained from that information, that data can then be used all throughout our various functions within our business. For example, gaining information from our products in order to support preventive maintenance, or gaining information from our products that go into our R&D cycle, or providing information that ultimately help our end consumers be more efficient within their homes.
Conventional wisdom says that CIOs in their technology credibility often give them the license to lead digital transformations. But of course, you're talking about all the other pieces that are required as well. Mm-hmm. And how has your technology credibility helped you shape the digital transformation? You talked a little bit about it. Are there other things we should discuss there?
Sure. I would say it's less about, you know, what change you're driving, such as in my case, I drive changes that are leveraging technology. But it's more about how do you build the credibility and trust, period, to drive change, right? Because driving change is about tapping into the hearts and the minds of people in order to bring them along with you in that journey. Again, whatever the change may be. And that is what CIOs really have been doing throughout their careers, is that change happens to be technology, but the leadership muscles that we've always been building over these years are related to being change agents and change champions. For example, what I mean by that is knowing, you know, that we have to start with helping others to understand the bigger why and painting the picture for them and where we're headed. Then we have to help people to understand the what we call the WIFM, or the what's in it for me. Then bring them along through the change. And being that leader who is present when things don't quite go exactly as planned through the change, and leading them through that stability. So these are the skills that other tech leaders and CIOs have always applied in our roles. And now we are just applying those same skills to digital transformations.
You know, it's interesting because I think some of our listeners may have a perspective that's a little different than that. So I'm going to ask kind of a controversial question, which is often I don't hear people talk about their CIO as somebody who's really focusing on heart. They tend to talk about them more as focusing on head. And it's interesting that you said that this has been a very deep and prolific skill set for the function. Do you think it's always been that case, or are you seeing it change more?
Yeah, I would say, and I can only speak from my lens, right? But from my lens, it's, and part of this, I will say, Merle, in my background is Six Sigma. You start with a why, which is core to what I do today. But that why, and I don't know if Six Sigma or not, but it's just kind of how I lead, knowing that everyone is driven differently, right? Everyone is going to move based upon their way of thinking. Some people are moved by data. Right. So it may be the same business case. And if I'm meeting with the CFO, I'm going to be very specific around the data and the detail of the business case. But if it's some others in the organization, they may want to understand that bigger picture. Right. Paint that story, paint that vision for me of where we're headed and how we're going to get there. Or if it's my team wants to know, okay, I understand where we're headed, but how exactly are we going to get there? What are some of those steps along the way? So I really do think, again, maybe just a part of my leadership style, but that's the heart aspect of it. Help that person look at it through their lens and what's going to move them and what, you know, what it is they're looking for versus my sharing with them exactly how I want to tell the story. So it's a different way of looking at that type of change that you want to drive.
Right. You know, and obviously all transformations are so heavily dependent on cross-business partnerships and relationships. What do you find is the skills and behaviors that have been the most critical for your success?
Yeah. So first I'd say listening, you know, is one of the primary. There's a few, but listening is the first. And let me just provide a little bit of background there regarding why I say that, which fits with my background. So I've become over the years very comfortable being new, if you will, and therefore having to come in, listen and learn. For example, while I was in DuPont, which had over 10 different business units, all very unique and different, I worked in a number of those business units and had to come in and listen and learn from the ground up. My time in Asia, I knew very little about the market and living abroad for that matter. So again, I was dependent upon my ability to listen and learn. And coming into Whirlpool, again, a brand new market. So I'm attuned to really being, you know, what some folks may seem uncomfortable, but for me, it's coming into a brand new space helps me to be very open to listening for challenges and opportunities and learning from my business partners.
You mentioned being in Asia. How was that when you first moved?
When I first moved, which is very different than how I think about it today, it was unnerving because I wasn't a world traveler. I learned for the first time what it really feels like to be, you know, a foreigner in another country where you have to figure out literally and rebuild everything personally and from a work perspective, from the ground up, from a work perspective. You know, it's very dependent upon my networks and knowing the processes and how to get things done. And in Asia, although it was the same company, I still had to figure out and build new networks and learn how things got done. And same thing on the personal side. It was a great day when I knew how to mail a letter, right? Or figure out how to get my favorite food. And so you learn, you know, to build yourself from the ground up. But then when you've, you know, done things like that numerous times, there's no job that I'm afraid to take because whenever you've gone through something like that, you know, it's not as bad, right? Or as foreign to you as moving to a whole nother country.
So I'd be curious to just talk to you just a little bit more about this, because many of my guests have talked about the fact that growth happens outside your comfort zone. What was going through your mind that made you decide to pick up and move across the world?
It was about an opportunity. And at the time, this was numerous years ago, 10 or so years ago, Asia was exploding. And so it was the opportunity to really be ingrained within that environment. I was based in Singapore, but my team was all over the region, in China, we have resources in India, in Korea, just all over the region. And so having to come in and learn, you know, again, what it is to typical things that would take us a year, we didn't have a year because if we took that long, we may have missed the market opportunity. Or coming in and having to learn how the different cultures even interacted, you know, or how I needed to build relationships with the various resources in the other countries. And so it was really about that learning and growth. That's really what drives me, Merle, to be honest. It's about coming in and being able to contribute. And that was the growth opportunity for me personally.
And as you were leading teams from all these different countries, did you find that you needed to change your leadership style at all, or was it pretty consistent?
No, I definitely needed to change it. What I learned coming in quickly was that you build relationships by being there face to face. And so I spent during my initial time there, probably 80% of the time traveling and just getting to meet my team, as well as my business colleagues as well. And so I learned the importance of those relationships, face to face relationships while over there. So that was critical for me.
Yeah, and you probably have a lot of frequent flyer miles. That's a lot of ground to cover.
For sure. I've leveraged that.
Well, let's go back to transformation. One of the things I'm interested in is As you're leading a transformation in all the different pieces, how do you manage the things that aren't in your control?
I think it's about once you have buy-in, right, from your various stakeholders, that's a skill set that's also very critical. And gaining that buy-in, you know, part of the skill there is around communication. Because people not only need to really understand that bigger why, but they need to understand that what's in it for me. And that's the key in getting people to own the change. Because you can believe in that change, you can, you know in your heart of hearts that it's the right thing to do, but until they own it and believe in it, then they are not going to really truly drive change. And you can do nothing by yourself, which is why you have to get buy-in from others. And I'll give you just, this is one small example. We're developing some strategy internally. And one of the things that I'm doing is as we start to further communicate out that strategy internally, I am having my team go out and present that strategy to others. Part of that is because I want them to really internalize it. I want them to own the change. I want them to feel that passion for it. And so it's about how do you engage others? Some of it is sharing, hey, so that you understand what's in it for you. But then secondly, is also having them share that message so that they can really have internalized it in order to be able to share it with others.
Yeah, that's a wonderful strategy.
Thank you.
So as you think about people who aren't technologists and are going through a digital transformation, what do you think they need to keep in mind?
Change, again, comes back to that tapping into the hearts and minds. And for various people, that comes in a variety of forms. You know, as leaders, we have to think about what are those various ways that people are motivated for that change and think about then how is it that they need to receive that information in order to get that buy-in.
And how much of a digital transformation do you think is really about the technology versus about the people?
Yeah, it is 90%, 80 to 90% about the people. And I'll give you a very clear example that every one of us can relate to. If we think about our own personal computers, you know, which is just technology, right? Something that you use to Word documents, emails, whatever. As soon as someone wants to change that, you become very passionate about, wait a minute, my icons are set exactly right here. It's not about the technology. It is about, hey, this is how I've learned to do my job. And I do it in what I believe is an efficient way. And you are going to now disrupt that. It's not about the system itself, because those are pretty much, you know, standard core systems, but you have to step back. And really what we do nowadays, Merle, is we've now put even more emphasis on the change management side of things, because it's step back from the technology and just understand what is changing in that person's world, right? What is going to now be different in how they get their job done and what is significant and what is minor, because those significant changes, especially, you are going to have to help them through that, meaning help them understand, you know, the why, how it will be more efficient for them, or how, you know, we're going to provide them with the tools that they may need on a daily basis, so that they don't get stuck, you know, in certain transactions. But that's all about the heart. It's not about technology, but it's about getting them to that space where they feel comfortable before you actually then apply the technology.
You know, one thing we're seeing so much is just change fatigue in general. And it's not just the change that's being driven by technology, which of course is huge, or anything within a company, but it's also just what everybody's been through, right? The whole pandemic, the social unrest, the attack on the Capitol, just everything.
Yes.
And so how are you thinking about how you drive change and the kind of change you need from a technology standpoint in the context of what everybody's dealing with?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We did see, you know, two different, there is the fatigue for sure from the macro things that are going on. But at the same time, a phenomenon happened that none of us could have predicted. Technology was adopted at a much faster rate. You know, especially at the start of the pandemic.
Right.
You know, I think one company said, you know, 5 years was just now condensed into 5 months, right? As far as the advancement of technology was concerned. And so what we've seen is that, you know, some of those consumer changes we expect to remain, such as a lot of consumers are now driven to online activity and purchases online. And so now, you know, internally, then what that drives is that we need to go at a fast rate to ensure that we are providing those features and that functionality that continues to allow our consumers to engage the way that they want to engage. So definitely some macro things that give us all fatigue. But then on the tech side, it is, you know, the phenomena of technology being adopted even faster.
And as all of this is speeding up, where do you see some of the untapped opportunities for functions to be better partners with one another as you drive the change?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I think the partnerships will come, for us anyway, within Whirlpool, they come naturally because we understand how linked we are together. And let me give you an example of that. And the we, by the way, is all of the functions across the business. So, for example, within Whirlpool, when we think about winning the digital consumer journey, which is part of, you know, one of our global strategic imperatives, we have to think about how the consumer engages with us throughout their full journey. From the time we initially engage with them during the pre-purchase part of the process, when they're thinking about what appliance they may want to buy, to the consideration phase. Now I know, you know, what appliance I want, but let me look at the different features, to the actual purchase itself, the first 30 days, because we're engaging with them, getting them to get their account set up so we can interact with them wirelessly, or they can interact with their products wirelessly. And then that long-term support and maintenance. So that's the end-to-end process. And the reason why we think about that full journey is because we want to, that journey, that full journey, to be frictionless. And we want to personalize that experience end-to-end for our consumers. So when you think about that full journey, think about how many functions that involves. It involves marketing, sales, supply chain, service, the IT organization. So this is why at Whirlpool, we drive our strategic imperatives with cross-functional teams to drive the change together. So I think, Merle, that untapped opportunity is for companies to ensure that they stand up these cross-functional teams, because that will break down those walls or those silos within organizations.
And how did you stand that up? Like, what is the structure that creates a team? Do you have a project management office or work streams, or what do you do?
No, and I definitely, to be clear, cannot take credit for it, because these are teams that existed within Whirlpool as a way of working, but immediately came in and saw that this is a great benefit, you know, or value within the company. And so, you know, the reason why I said no so quickly around PMO is it's not meant to provide a lot of overhead or governance. It is about who are the people within these various organizations that have a stake, a key stake in that success of that end-to-end consumer journey. And those are the teams at the table. So an example of that is when we think about connectivity with our products, at the table includes the IT organization, because we need to think about the cloud environment. We need to think about IoT, which is the data, getting the data off of the sensors. We need to think about analytics. It involves our product development organization, because they are the ones who own the development of the actual product and embedding the engineering into the technology. Our marketing group is at the table because they own the life cycle of the product, sales, et cetera. So we think about who are those key stakeholders, and those are the teams that are working together to talk about current, you know, use cases or initiatives we're working on, as well as planning for the future.
And I'm curious, you know, a lot of our clients are mapping the employee journey as well. And are you doing that at Whirlpool?
Absolutely. Coming into a company in the middle of a pandemic, we've had to be creative with how we engage with employees. And one thing that I do is have what I call coffee chats, which are small groups of employees that I get a chance to just meet and greet virtually. But I share that with you because even one of the newer employees in our company has shared, you know, who works in HR, has shared, yes, we've modernized our platforms, but now we need to think about how do we improve that employee experience. You have the basics in now, we're all in a global system, but now it's about enhancing the employee experience, whether it's through, no one wants to read through 2 and 3 page documents in order to learn how to do something. People are now older and younger, used to YouTube videos, right? I just want a quick 60-second video to tell me how to do X or how to do Y. And so we're starting to think about what is our strategy as we go forward to now leverage value from our system.
I know, too, you've written a lot on emerging technology and different digital opportunities. From what you're seeing now, what new tech developments do you think leaders need to pay most attention to?
Sure. There's a couple areas that I'll call out. So one is RPA, which is robotics process automation. So this is not emerging, but it's more on the mature side of the curve. But this is where you can leverage, companies can leverage technology to automate some common or standard steps within a process. So for example, you can automate steps within your order to cash process or your rec to pay process, or even common HR or IT tasks, et cetera. So we within Whirlpool are really taking advantage of this technology in order to free up our teams and move them into more value-added activities. In fact, we're even building an entire COE around scaling robotics across multiple organizations and just really harnessing the value from that technology. The second I'd say is around artificial intelligence and machine learning. And this is with when you think about the amount of data that's now exposed through these modern technology platforms, the return or value really comes from the insights that are gained and the action taken based upon those new insights. And AI and ML has been out there for some time now, but the difference going forward is having it embedded into core processes or using AI at the edge is what they say, if you will, meaning on the device. Think about autonomous cars or using it as part of natural language processing, meaning AI is used to understand the context or sentiment of natural languages. So these are all things that of course have to be very applicable to use cases within your organization, because it should never be technology for the sake of technology. But these are some things that at a minimum organizations should be piloting to truly understand their applicability or not.
You, of course, have had quite a career in STEM and came up that way. And yet there are still so few women and people of color in the field. What was the experience like for you as you progressed into leadership roles?
Sure. I'll tell you, Meryl, from the time I was many moons ago, from the time I was a computer science major in college to my corporate career now, the majority of the time I've been one of the few females and or women of color and the first in many of the roles that I've been in. However, what has helped me, you know, along the way is that I've always had very strong networks of individuals and groups that have provided the support that I've needed. They may not have been in the room with me because I was typically the only, but I could always call and get advice from them and, quite frankly, motivation and the support. And we all need that. Therefore, my advice for others who are still in this, unfortunately, still in this place today where they may be the only in a room, make sure that you surround yourself with a good support system and individuals that can continue to motivate and encourage you. And then secondly, or lastly, I'll just add that because, you know, to this person, if you are the only in the room, do everything that you can, you know, to change that, you know, by supporting diversity and inclusion initiatives and being that advocate for getting other diverse members to the table.
And is, you've surrounded yourself with this network. What does that network look like? What kind of people are they? How did you find them? I have a lot of young people always asking about how they better build their network.
I'll go back to when I first started coming up in my career. I'll say my leader at that point in time shared with me that, hey, you know, half of what you do is going to be your heads down work that you're doing, the work that you deliver. The other half is going to be your networks that you build. Now, of course, I thought that that was crazy, you know, because, hey, I'm a heads down, you know, get the work done and my work will show for itself. But that has proven to not be true, right? Those networks are important in many ways because they help you to get your work done in a more efficient or a better way because others may have already been down that road before. So networks help in that way. When you get stuck or don't know kind of which direction to go, they can help guide you. So I was coached very early on to build networks. It's been said before, is your your own personal board of directors, which typically board of directors have a variety of people on them that can help you coach and guide you from many different aspects. So that's how I think about and highly leverage my network today.
D, Danny, you mentioned that it's important to have different types of people or a variety of people on your personal board of directors. Tell us about the kinds of folks that you've got.
So I have one person who is a mentor of mine. And so he has, he's on a couple very large boards that are have large companies, sorry, large revenue. He's an ex-CIO, so ex-executive as well. So I call on him for, you know, leadership advice, career advice, et cetera. There are at least two CEOs from prior companies, one from one of the businesses that I was in DuPont. Another is the prior company that I was with, the CEO there. Same thing, I call upon them for advice. And then I don't just call them just for that advice. If one who lives half the time in Chicago, I'll meet up with her for lunch, you know, every time she comes up for the summer. I have someone who's actually not as senior as me, but she didn't have that drive to take on the responsibility, but extremely, extremely smart. She's in the IT world and I call upon her and she helps me out as well. And so there's probably about three or four others, but that's the variety of people within my network.
Yeah, that's terrific. And so when you were mid-career, how did you build your network? What'd you do?
I went out and networked. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Let me give you very specific examples. If there is a networking event for new employees or mid-career, in my case, CIO events or technology events, I would go. As much as I wanted to just go home and, you know, plop on the couch, you know, but I knew it was important to get out there and meet individuals because when you meet them, you don't necessarily know how your paths will cross in the future, right? So it's not always an immediate, and it should, one thing to think about, it's give and take, right? So it's not always an immediate when I meet someone, okay, I need this person for X or they need me for Y. It's just exchanging information. And then, oh, by the way, down the road, we happen to, you know, I remember a person X was doing, you know, something in their company. So let me reach out to them. So you have to be very active in events. And now it's even easier, Merle, because of the virtual events that's happened. You have to put in the effort, but the return has been so much greater for me.
Well, and you talked earlier about then how you leverage your network. So it takes work to build it, but it, I'm sure, makes things much faster when you're using it.
Absolutely. And I don't only just use it for myself. It's also around, you know, if I have a colleague that is having a challenge with X, I'll say, oh, let me connect you with this person, right? Or someone else needs, you know, advice on another area, I'll connect them because they in turn do the same for me. So those networks are just multiplied, you know, when you really are intentional about it.
And in addition to your network, as you think back really across your whole journey around the globe and at top tier companies, what do you now see or know that you think C-suite people should have known earlier on in their career?
Yeah, great question. I would say from my perspective, it's to enjoy the moments, right? And soak up really each experience. When you're in a certain role or gaining a certain experience, really soak up that experience because in each experience, you're gaining important lessons and building those relationships, right, that we just talked about that you will draw from in your future. So now that I look back, I see how my various experiences have all included fundamental building blocks that are critical to me to this day. Each experience has provided knowledge that I continue to draw from to this day in my CIO role. And then finally, you know, I'd say I continue to call on these colleagues, as I mentioned, from the past, whether it's to gain insight in certain areas or quite honestly, even to this day for support or to just bend their ear at times.
Right. It's always amazing how much we're a product of our past experience. You've talked about so many things you've brought forward with you, which I think are terrific. I'm also curious what you think leaders need to let go of.
I'd say maybe it's personal, I don't know, but taking ourselves so seriously, Merle, quite honestly, because none of us are perfect and none of us know it all, right? So it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to just listen and learn versus needing to feel like you always have to have the answers. It's about telling your team, you know what? You are right about that item and I was wrong. They will appreciate that vulnerability more than we know. They know that we don't wear a cape. You know, we just have to realize it ourselves that we don't wear that cape.
That's great. And is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have?
No, I just say, you know, again, a personal reflection is to just one thing, you know, that you may or may not be coming out in some of these questions is that just always have that spirit of curiosity and willingness to learn and develop. And maybe it's because I'm in technology or not, I don't know, but I would suspect business continues to change as well. So it's the same thing there, but always be curious, always have that learning mindset. And that's what really keeps me motivated and driven, you know, every single day, and be willing to take on these new and different opportunities. And that has helped me grow tremendously, personally and professionally.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly a big fan of that. And that's a big tenet of the attributes of people we hire in the firm. And I hear that a lot from my podcast guests as well. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Good.
Well, this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation, Dani, and I want to thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Merle, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure. And now I'm in your network.
Yes, you are.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dani.
Thank you.
Despite her technology background, Dani emphasizes that people are the key component in fueling any reinvention. Here are a few of my key takeaways. First, even digital transformations are more about changing the mindsets of the people impacted than about the technology being rolled out. In her experience, Dani estimates that 80 to 90% of a transformation is about managing the disruption that people often feel when innovation requires them to perform their tasks differently. With change management as an essential component of transformations, Dani says, leaders can better address people's perceptions and reactions to ensure success. Second, Dani uses a variety of tactics to engage her stakeholders. For example, she puts her team front and center in presenting their strategy to others. In her view, team members are more likely to internalize a change when they engage with others about it. Consequently, they also become more likely to feel ownership of that change. She also turns to video for learning. She prefers to share content through 60-second videos instead of providing pages of documents and instructions, because people are more likely to tune into that medium. Dani and her team also mine data from Whirlpool's products to reimagine customer products and experiences. Likewise, we can surface data to reimagine the employee experiences we create in the workplace. Third, Dani has treated each role in her career as an opportunity to learn something new and to build herself from the bottom up, she says. Whether in a new business unit or a new country, Dani has prioritized understanding the environment and how to contribute or grow through that experience. That's a great approach to learning and building up our capacity to thrive amidst change. Fourth, as a leader who may be the only in the room, whether it's because of your gender, skin color, or other identity, it's important to do two things. One, surround yourself with people who motivate and encourage you. And two, advocate and find paths for other diverse people like you to be in the room. Lastly, Dani also reminds us to enjoy the journey toward our professional and personal dreams. Soak up each experience, she says, because that's where we gain our most important lessons and build the strongest relationships. In those experiences also lie opportunities to be vulnerable and not take ourselves too seriously. Thank you, Dani, for sharing your insights about championing change. And thanks to all of you for listening to Let Go and Lead. Until next time.